Welcome to the Living a Naturally Healthy Life podcast with Delaine ND, the podcast for people looking to correct chronic illnesses such as diabetes through lifestyle change. I'm Dr. Delaine Vaughn. As a physician, I see many patients who are ill because of lifestyle decisions such as food choices. Typically, diseases such as diabetes are managed with pills or injections. This approach creates a vicious, expensive, and unhealthy cycle of medication and then more medication to address the negative side effects. As a physician and a life coach, I work with clients to resolve their diseases, get off their medications, and live a naturally healthy life. If you don't like the healthcare system in America, I recommend you use less of it by being naturally healthy. So if you feel there has to be a better, more natural way to live a healthy life, you are in the right place. Hello, welcome back to the podcast. This is podcast number 5. We are going to be talking about the primitive brain and the prefrontal cortex. Very exciting stuff, guys, but it really will help you kind of understand why you are drawn to certain foods even when they don't serve you. So today is September 1st when I'm recording this. It should go live tomorrow on the 2nd. I hope everybody's enjoying a long holiday weekend. I hope you're actually off work and able to spend some time with your family or do whatever it is you want to that's relaxing. So speaking of spending time with my family is all home, so you may hear kids screaming or stuff being moved. We're moving some stuff around, some furniture around, so I've asked everybody to be quiet for a few minutes while I record this, but you never can tell with kids what they're going to do. So if you hear something, I'm sure nobody's dying. I'm sure it's all okay, but that's why there's so many noises here today. There's also people doing yard work. I hear a lawnmower or I don't know what it is, some yard tool going on outside. You may hear all sorts of things. I hope it's not too distracting. So today, I am going to talk about the primitive brain mostly. I'll also talk a little bit about the prefrontal cortex, but this is really in preparation for a few podcasts that I have coming up. I'm reading a book called Salt, Sugar, Fat by an author named Michael Moss. It's a book about how the food industry has hooked us on the foods that inevitably make us sick. A lot of that goes back to this biochemistry and this neurochemistry in our brains, so we're going to talk about that quite a bit today. And you also may remember that I recently put a Facebook post up asking why you find it difficult to live a healthy life. I first want to thank everybody that responded. So many good responses. You'll be hearing about them in future podcasts. But I want to relate, there are a couple different responses that I think speak specifically to this primitive brain business. So I was going to kind of tie those responses into this also and help you see what's going on there, maybe shed some light on that. So one of the responses was by my friend Vicky Hardesty Cowan. She said, becoming a food addict or becoming addicted to sugar and junk food is what she said. It's made to make people addicted, and trying to get off of it is like quitting a horrible addiction. Another friend of mine, Cassie Dunn, said that eating healthy is unfamiliar, or being healthy, making healthier choices is unfamiliar. You go into autopilot when you eat. Sometimes we're lazy and we haven't pre-planned for the week. So I'm going to talk a little bit about the neurochemistry that makes both of those things very true and challenging for us as human beings. So a lot of the science behind why we want food all of the time is related to how a primitive part of our brain works. There are two parts of the brain that helps us make decisions. One is the primitive brain and one is the prefrontal cortex. And you're going to hear me circle back around to this information in future episodes, not only when I'm discussing kind of what I've read in this book, Sugar, Salt, Fat, but also just in general when it comes to making better decisions for our health, how it can be so challenging because of the way our primitive brain works. So the primitive brain is the part of our brain that makes decisions based on what's easy, what feels good, and how we can avoid pain or danger. So I'm going to give a couple examples here. There are tons of examples, and I'll go into some of them more in depth, and then others I'll just touch on briefly. But you can think how certain things served us 10,000 years ago, served us when we were pre-modern. And now in this postmodern existence, those responses that our brain has are not serving us. So the first example I'm going to talk about is anxiety. So 10,000 years ago, anxiety usually meant you were in a life or death situation. you were faced with either a natural event that could have physically harmed us, maybe a tornado, a blizzard, a storm, a hurricane, something like that, or maybe you had come into contact with a predatorial animal, or your past experiences led you to believe that you had a higher chance of coming into contact with a predatory animal. Maybe there was a conflict with a rival tribe who wanted to take your land or enslave your tribe or your family. All of this set off a neuroresponse in our brain that led to feelings of anxiety. The biochemistry of anxiety leads to heightened awareness, a keen sense to the details around us, the ability to see danger or the potential danger in every scenario. And this, again, was a survival strategy for the early Homo sapien. These feelings of impending doom were because there was really impending doom. However, today, most of the time when we're feeling anxiety, it's not something that's going to serve our survival. Maybe it's something that's going to serve us in our community living or in our society, but it's not usually because we're going to die. Sometimes we find that these feelings of anxiety wreak havoc in our lives and on our brains, right? Certainly there can be discomfort in day-to-day life because of things that come up, and we experience anxiety with that, but it's usually a response to something like a bill being due or maybe a project being due at work, or sometimes even the anticipation of an experience, maybe a phone call, maybe you've been dating somebody and you're really not sure where that relationship's going, and you anticipate, you know, they haven't been calling you, they haven't been texting you, they haven't been contacting you, and you see them call, and that's the anticipation of that phone call, meaning that it's the end of that relationship that you were hoping might go further, right? So all of these things lead to substantial anxiety in our life. All of these experiences can lead to substantial anxiety in our life. Our brain, in a very primitive way, is prepping us for danger and impending doom that doesn't really exist, right? Bills that don't get paid do not usually kill us. Missed projects at work don't usually kill us. They may certainly negatively impact our performance review, but we're not going to die in that moment. Same thing with the anticipation of a phone call or a negative experience socially, not usually going to kill us, but definitely can lead to these sensations of impending doom. Living our lives with unchecked anxiety can lead to stress hormone release, which in excess leads to negative impacts on our body. People who have higher stress, hormone release, cortisol release, those kinds of things are known to be at a higher risk of having heart attack or other negative health effects just from the experience of that stress. So this is a way that, 10,000 years ago, that anxiety served us. It led to our survival. And today we experience it in a way that does not lead to our survival, but in fact leads us to have negative health effects from it. Another example, belonging. So the early Homo sapien, like 10,000 years ago, the Homo sapiens fared better if they were part of community living, of tribal living. To be kicked out of the tribe or kicked out of the community did usually mean certain death. Our chance of survival was enhanced by living with a group of other people, living in a community, living in a tribe. This evolutionary advantage was rewarded with feel-good neurochemistry, right? When we got along well enough to stay within the tribe, we had feel-good neurochemistry released. When we were accepted amongst our peers, we had this feel-good neurochemistry released into our brain to help incentivize us to continue to do that so that we survived. In modern Homo sapien life, our families have, one, grown quite large, partly due to life longevity, but also partly due to the ease of staying connected through technology. But there's still this primitive push that makes us want to be accepted and liked amongst our communities. This isn't always a bad thing, but sometimes this primitive drive is so strong that it leads us to make decisions that don't always serve us, or that even aren't in alignment with our morals when there's peer pressure to do something that doesn't align with our ethics and our morals. A lot of times this is driven by biochemistry. And being aware of that, using that prefrontal cortex then to make a different decision, serves us better now. So A lot of times where we see this in modern human life is people spending hours on social media to see who liked our post or to see who accepted our friend request, to build these quote-unquote connections with people who don't really exist in our life. This triggers that feel-good neurochemistry in our brain. The downside to this is it causes us to spend hours on our phones, on our computers, instead of actually connecting with the other humans that are actually in our lives, instead of building intimate, close relationships with actual people in our life, we waste time on the internet, on these social media sites. So you also see neurochemistry promoting our survival as a species. This is what drove parental bonds to our offspring. It's reinforced biochemically. Again, why is this? Because it was important to the survival of our species. Human beings will frequently get positive neurochemical reinforcements when they take risks. Before there was adrenaline junkies, 10,000 years ago, taking risk was really like innovation. It was trying something new, seeing if this would work. And that did benefit us as a species in moving us to be the dominant species on the planet, okay? All of these behaviors are positively reinforced with neurochemistry in order to drive our survival as a species and the success of our species. In general terms, again, the primitive brain wants to seek out pleasure, avoid pain and death, and expend the least amount of energy possible. It's like biochemically, we are lazy college kids, right? And if anybody remembers having to work to get off of the couch and not be eating potato chips or playing video games on the couch and being utterly lazy or, you know, sleeping till noon, right? All of that is actually biochemically driven. It's not that all of us were lazy or that our 20-year-olds are going to grow up to be, you know, hooligans because they can't get off the couch. It's a biochemistry thing. So how this plays out with food. Again, 10,000 years ago, we had to be incentivized to get out of the safety of the cave, quote unquote, wherever our home was, wherever our safe haven was. We had to be incentivized to get outside of that and go and hunt and gather. So when we eat food, our brain has developed to release these feel-good hormones, to provide that primitive brain with that potent positive reinforcement so that we didn't stay in the safety of the cave and starve to death. 10,000 years ago, long before there was any food production industry available to us, our food was naturally rationed to us. Maybe we would find delicious berries on a bush, and maybe we would eat them and we'd eat all of them and they were delicious. But once the bush was emptied of those berries, there was no more berries to be eaten, so we couldn't continue to get these positive reinforcement hits by neurochemistry into our brain. We couldn't just go to Dillon's and get more berries. We also did very little alterations or processing to our food. 10,000 years ago, we weren't making jellies with the berries that we found. When we make jelly, we increase the natural sugar available. It releases it from its bind with fiber, and you get this increased natural sugar availability when we make jellies. We also tend to add sugar to jelly because the natural amount of sugar available to us doesn't taste as sweet as our tongues have become accustomed to. 10,000 years ago, we weren't consuming flour the way we do today. To make flour, to pull wheat from the field and grind it up, concentrating that carbohydrate component of wheat took a ton of energy and lots of resources, and so it wasn't available to us all the time. Unlike today, where floured foods are available anywhere we go all the time, prepackaged in a wrapper, you can just pull it off the shelf and eat it. 10,000 years ago, you would eat the berries from a bush, and you would eat all of them maybe, and in response to that food, your brain would release these neurotransmitters, and you would feel amazing. And you'd want more, but there wasn't any more to eat until the bush replenished the berries, and that took time, weeks, right? Even if you really wanted them, they weren't there. You waited, and no one died because of this. This happened with all of our foods before we industrialized our food production. Today, we not only have food available to us all the time whenever we want it, as much as we can stand, but we've also learned and developed ways to concentrate the nutrients in the food, which gives us then a concentrated release of those feel-good neurotransmitters. Have you ever noticed how much better you feel when you eat ice cream? How your breakup with your significant other doesn't seem so bad after a pint of Ben & Jerry's? That's biochemistry. That's not something you're making up in your head. You really do feel better. It really does get easier. And it feels better because your brain is bathed in these feel-good neurotransmitters. Please understand that our brains do this not only with food, but with all sorts of other things that lead to feel-good neurochemistry, like we've talked about before. We do this with social media. We do this with risk-taking. We do this with everything: shopping, alcohol, drug use, sex, porn, all of it. Our primitive brains have developed a way to turn almost anything into too much. Now recognize that not every human brain responds the same way to these things. But most humans, their brains have a few different ways that they will use to help them feel better, okay? So an example of this: gambling is not my thing. I have been, except for once when I stayed a weekend at a hotel casino in Vegas. I stepped into that casino a lot. Outside of that, I think I've stepped into a casino twice in my life. It's just not my thing. I don't have a gambling problem, and I don't see that I ever will have a gambling problem because that's just not a temptation for me. But I'll tell you what is my thing. Food is my thing. Shopping, drinking, social media, that's my thing. I have to rein all of those things in. For some people, shopping is not their thing. They actually get their dopamine hits by watching their savings account rise, right? That actually gives them their feel-good neurotransmitter. For me, I really enjoy shopping, and that's something I have to make sure that I'm not overdoing it with, right? The joke about spending the mortgage payment on shoes, that's real for me. Left to my own devices, I would really do that. I don't do that because I've got this great other part of my brain that weighs the pros and the cons of my decision-making, right? So our primitive brain, the bottom line, it seeks out pleasure, it wants to avoid pain, and it wants to expend the least amount of energy possible to do these things. The enhancement of our food processing and ease of availability of food has exploited our primitive brain's decision-making skills into what has led to disease states for many of us. Where now we have, in the responses to my Facebook post from a few weeks ago, becoming addicted to food and sugar and junk food. It's made to make people addicted to it, and trying to get off of it is like quitting a horrible addiction. Or you go into autopilot when you're eating, you're unfamiliar with these better ways of eating, and our brains are lazy and wants to do what we've always done. We haven't pre-planned for the week so that we at least have an easier way of making a better decision. All of these things that people mention in these Facebook posts are primitive brain driven. There's nothing wrong with you as a human being. You're perfectly normal, just like every other human being. So the good news that's out there, we're not all destined to die of diabetes and lifestyle-related diseases. There's a reason that we're not all 600-pound diabetics, alcoholics, shopaholics, drug addicts, and gamblers, right? Our brains have developed another part that evaluates the pros and the cons of our decisions. The reasons that, again, that I don't spend my house payment on shoes is because of my prefrontal cortex, this other part of our brain, this more modern part of our brain. The prefrontal cortex is what I like to look at as the watchful mother. It makes decisions based on, not based only on seeking out pleasure, avoiding pain, and making it easy, but instead it looks at the future. It looks at our past life lesson. It looks for decisions that serve higher goals. The prefrontal cortex makes decisions after weighing the pros and the cons. So simply put, the primitive brain is like a toddler with a permanent marker running around your house. The toddler doesn't mean to be menacing. The primitive brain doesn't mean to be menacing. The toddler doesn't have any ill intentions to do harm to your home. The primitive brain doesn't have any ill intentions to do harm to you and your health. But you and I both know you better keep an eye on that kid with a marker in your house, or your walls are going to be covered in permanent marker. And it's the same thing with this primitive part of our brain. We have to keep an eye on what our primitive brain is driving us to do, or we'll end up physically ill with things like diabetes, heart disease, cholesterol problems, hypertension, all of those things. So the watchful mother to this toddler in the house with the marker keeps an eye on that kid. It directs the toddler to use the marker in places that are appropriate and not destroy the house. The prefrontal cortex is your watchful mother in your health decisions. So in future podcasts, you're going to hear me talking about the primitive brain and the prefrontal cortex. I'll come back to this over and over and over. But today, I just wanted to give you a brief overview of this concept. The awareness of these two parts of our brains allows us to develop new strategies to reach our health goals. In my next podcast, I'll be discussing how the food industry has utilized that primitive brain and exploited our neurochemistry in order to become millionaires at the expense of our health. Again, I hope this awareness gives you new tools to make better decisions and reach your health goals. We'll talk about it more next week. You guys have a great week. Bye-bye. Thank you for listening. If you've enjoyed today's episode, please subscribe and share with your friends and family. Also, leave me a review. If you want to resolve your diabetes naturally without any pills or injections, I can help you. Visit DelaineMD.com for more information. Click on the Work With Me tab, send me a message, and we can set up a mini coaching session. You guys have a great week. I'll talk to you soon.